Join Johannes, a necromancer of some little infamy, and his charismatic brother Horst in the many adventures of the Cabal Brothers on the Necromancer's Deathcast. From circuses to dreamlands in turn-of-the-century Never Never England, author Jonathan L. Howard brings his dry wit and exceptionally clever writing to this series of the most intense and tumultuous proportions. Rise up, all ye undead, and rejoice in the wonder that is the Necromancer's Deathcast.
Welcome to the Necromancer's Deathcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 3.1, The Faust Clause, where we are discussing the book Johannes Cabal, The Necromancer. My name is Tanzin, and I'm joined by Amber.
Hello.
And Jess.
Hi.
A charmingly gothic, fiendish, funny Faustian tale about a brilliant scientist who makes a deal with the devil. Twice. Johannes Cabal sold his soul years ago in order to learn the laws of necromancy. Now he wants it back. Amused and slightly bored, Satan proposes a wager. Johannes has to persuade 100 people to sign over their souls, or he will be damned forever. This time, for real. Accepting the bargain, Johannes is given one calendar year and a traveling circus to complete his task. With little time to waste, Johannes raises a motley crew of the dead and enlists his brother Horst, a charismatic vampire, to help him run his nefarious roadshow, resulting in mayhem at every turn. So this is a bit of a difference between the short stories that we have been examining. We're in a full-fledged novel here.
Yeah, and it's really defining the difference too, because right off the bat from the short stories, it was just like instant plot, and this was just so fanciful and magical and descriptors and a little bit more bullshit. I guess, you know, you've got the time to get into it, right? So there was a lot more
bullshit.
I would say bullshit.
Wow.
Not that it's not fun or nice,
it's fun,
but like
bullshit.
I don't know. It kind of feels like those cop shows when you're like the police are doing like interrogating and they're talking to the milkman and they're talking to the grocer and they're talking to the newspaper delivery boy. Just the way we jump through these demons in the first little paragraph, it's like here. Talk to this guy, talk to that guy, talk to this guy, insult him. And now we're at the actual plot.
And now we have time to wax and wane.
See, whereas I find that with the length of the chapters, they almost are short stories in and of themselves.
They do seem like small, short stories, though. They do. I agree with that.
Yeah, no, I mean, the length of the chapters, and I mean, sure, there's a lot of stuff. I'm not quite sure what you mean by bullshit, but
I appreciate it, and it's fun, and it's world building. But for example, like, the very first demon that he meets there,
Hey, wait a sec. What book are you reviewing?
The Necromancer.
Because we start off with the last night of April, Night of Witches, when evil walks abroad, right? Mm-hmm. So
should we do...
So he's summoning...
He's summoning. Yeah.
My point is that the books are... I mean, you... I don't know. I don't see it as short stories. They're just clearly more drawn out to the point, which is, again, part of the author's writing. I like it. It's just a lot different from the short stories, which seem to get to the point a lot faster, you know?
Hmm. Right. His short stories are like very punchy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I see. What
a little bit more like snap, snap, snap. Whereas these ones, you know, you've got the time to take, and he really does take it.
Spends a little more time sort of setting the scene mm-hmm. and setting the
character.
So going from
lots
short
of character
story
descriptions.
Okay. Exactly. So reading one short story and another short story and then getting to this, it's like, oh, the pace has dramatically slowed down.
Hmm.
Which, again, is what you're going to experience from a short story to a full novel, but...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, this was the story that hooked me into Jonathan L. Howard's writing. Like, this was my first introduction to the Cabal character, and later, spoiler, Horst
yes.
as well. Yeah, and I mean, this is how I fell in love with the entire series. So, it was interesting to go back and take a look at those short stories.
Right.
And be like, oh, I didn't even know there was a bit of a backstory to Johannes.
Some little tiny filler cracks in there.
Yeah, now we find him in his 20-somethings. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember in the short story. I was trying to figure out. I have to look back on our own podcast.
He was about 24 in the first short story.
This one, he's in
the second short story didn't really have an age, but he was
late 20s in the second story. It doesn't say specifically what.
Okay. Yeah.
And this one follows.
So it's a little closer in chronology then.
So I think he's pretty close to 30, if not 30. Mm-hmm.
But in later, it describes him as in his late 20s, rather.
So, okay. So he might still be.
I think it's late 20s.
So yeah, might not quite be at 30 yet.
Here it is. In his late 20s. Is what I wrote. So it gives you a little context. And that's just before, when we...
Physically.
When he gets to hell, we find that out. However, we are jumping ahead.
Chapter 1. Johannes Cabal, a necromancer of some little infamy, invades hell. He navigates the tumultuous gates of hell, makes it past the dark general of the infernal hordes, and finally makes it to Satan himself. Cabal intrigues Satan and strikes a new deal for 100 souls in 1 year via traveling carnival. Chapter 1, in which a scientist visits hell and a deal is struck.
So before we even get to hell... We are introduced to Cabal basically raising a demon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? So this is our introduction to the lanky...
Right at work, as always.
Necromancer.
Mm-hmm. You start off with the Walpurgis Nacht, the Hexen Nacht, the first night of April, the night of witches, because apparently that is a significant night to...
Last night of April.
Talking to demons.
Is that what it is?
Last night of April, yeah. April 30th.
Oh, is it last? Oh, whoops, okay.
Oh, I don't know anything about this. This is a thing?
It is a thing, actually, yeah.
You'd be surprised just how much real stuff that that Jonathan Howard incorporates into his writing. In fact, the summoning of this demon is actually from a real book. It's I did some research because I was all these names and I was like, when he sounded familiar.
Is that the Aureus Alma? I'm not even going to try to pronounce all this.
Oh, right.
In fear that I might raise my own demon. So right. I'll just stop trying to pronounce
Beetlejuice,
it.
Beetlejuice.
No, do it!
These names are directly from the Book of Ceremonial Magic, including Rites and Mysteries of Geotic Theology. Sorcery and Infernal Necromancy. That's the whole title.
This is an actual book.
This is an actual book.
It's a historical
by
book?
Author Edward Waite in 1911.
Oh.
Yeah. And this is the third conjuration of the mysteries of infernal evocation. And quite literally, the new character that we run into, which is Lucifuge Rofocal.
I can't pronounce it. Go ahead and try.
And the description is straight from this book, including the points where he's like, stop hitting me with that dreaded rod. Oh, lo, I am here. What dost thou seek of me? Why dost thou disturb my repose? Smite me no more with that dread rod. Is a direct quote from this Briel book.
Huh. I like it.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
So to throw back to more realness, this holiday is a legitimate, like, pagan holiday, et cetera, et cetera. And it basically, you know, grows back to, you know, a celebration of, like, when the witches say goodbye to winter and hello to spring. And they fly around this mountaintop on their brooms. Blah, 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 blah. It all happened, and apparently, to, like, really summarize it, is that it pays tribute to warding off pests and illness and witchcraft, et cetera, et cetera. And it's based on this old-timey German mountain, Brockton Mountain, which is where Faust happens.
Ooh!
The depth continues.
Uh-huh.
He's... Jonathan L. Howard is very well read.
He does, his research.
Well researched. Because everything that I've looked up so far, all of the name droppings that he's done, there is somebody that is based off of so far that I can find. Some of them I haven't researched because, like,
you'll be here all day.
Right.
It's just too much.
It's too much. It's just one sentence with five references to six books. No big deal.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And yet then we get into the character descriptions, like, seriously, I have to point this out. As is often the case with demons, Lucifuge looked like an anatomical game of consequences. that's my favorite introduction to the first demon, Lucifuge. So, after he's summoned by the spell. That apparently has some basis in a real-life book.
And if any of our listeners are interested, I have created a post on our website that has links to either purchasing this book or a Google Doc to be able to look at this document as well. At least the page from it. Because it's interesting. Because why not? So next, after the summoning happens, we find ourselves at the gate. The gates of hell.
Well, I just wanted to throw in, sorry, as well. Go ahead. Lucifuge, when he... you know, shows up and he's got all of his, you know, apparently straight out description from the book. One of the descriptions is that he's holding a symbolic bag of all the world's riches. I really thought that was cool too, because it's kind of considered that Hades is like the god of riches because all of the resources in the ground belong to him because he is in the underworld, right? So therefore all the resources are under his domain. So I like that, you know, the demons also symbolically share that kind of, we have all the riches of the world on us as well.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit more connection to an underworld in general, not just Satan and God, but it's just in general.
That's cool.
You get more mythologies out there.
Yeah. And even later on, it brings up, you know, the devil specifically references Tartarus.
That's right.
Right. So it's like, oh, there actually is like a bleeding of religions, faith, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, totally. So, yeah. And I do like that a lot of different religions, like as you go through the book, there's sort of no, it's non-denominational, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like we crack jokes at the, you know, all the different faiths as we descend into hell.
Yeah.
You know, and the perceptions thereof.
No one is safe.
Perceptions of Satan. Yeah. So
yeah.
But yes, I love when he meets Lucifuge and he asks about, where's your dread rod? And
yes,
Cabal, I just, you know, happened to leave it at home. I just find this, I once again, as I've said before, I love the irreverence. Essentially, Cabal does things his own ways and usually unexpectedly successful results.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely part of his charm.
What was that? The don't be fatuitous. Do you have
fatuous
brandy? No, I don't like brandy. It's not for you. Then he does offer him his hip flask.
Totally.
He's like, this really is a shambles.
But it works and he gets to hell.
You're here, aren't you?
Yeah.
Right. And so he heads directly to the gates of hell after meeting the demon. And one of my favorite quotes, one could be forgiven for thinking hell's a popular place to get into.
Yes!
Perhaps surprisingly, it is.
So this is part of the reason why I think that it just jumps a little bit, because like that whole transition from Lucifuge to gates of hell, there is no transition. It's just the next sentence.
That's true.
So it's just like boom, 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 boom. Person, 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 thing, thing, thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Kind of just on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not
scene change.
Yeah, totally
rather well. Quickly.
I mean, he could go through, and he walked, and he walked,
well,
and he walked.
Not but even then that,
the Lord of the Rings.
But then, how did he get to the gates of hell?
Like, this was could that? Be just the fact that I don't have a paper copy with me right now. I'm treating an ebook, and maybe the ebook isn't edited properly. But for me, there was no break. There was no space. No. It was just the next sentence.
I noticed that too. Yeah,
and yeah, and like again, you don't need to always describe the interim, but it doesn't even say like. You know, Cabal's not even like, oh, I need you to do something for me, or I need you to take me somewhere. Right. I need you to send me somewhere.
Or
I need you
to show me later, the door. 3 days later on the path to hell.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's just, there's just no transition. It's just like, you didn't even do the ritual right.
I know in my-
And then I was in hell.
The ebook copy, it does have a space break. So it does have a little symbol starting a new
Yours
chapter.
Yours is fancier than mine is.
Well, I was
Thank you, Kindle.
I was listening to the audiobook, so, yeah. You know, there's-
For me, it just the transition was just like There was no, like, take me to hell with you, or tell me how to get to hell, or I want to go to hell. It was just like, you did the ritual wrong. Anyways, now I'm in hell.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yes, hell, an adamantine finger of rock a mile in diameter and 2 miles high, surrounded by limbo. The gates are a massive iron construction, hundreds of feet wide and 1,000 high. It's a lovely passage, how hell is perceived, but nobody can guess the horror of the forms. To gain entrance to hell, 9,747 forms to fill on average.
And anything is better than the forms.
I had such a good laugh. The first torment of hell is designed by a bank clerk.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is. I'm sure of it.
I think this is where I first fell in love with the book. The first time I read it was just like the humor. Mm-hmm. Because we've all been there. We've all having done administration and management most of my life, I'm just like, oh my God, I get it. Like, no, that is my version of hell.
And the fact that he says that even the shortest form of only 5 questions would be enough to start a brand new religion.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Or a management course.
Or a management course. At the least.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I also liked the descriptor, the congas of hopeful applicants wound around the gatehouse. Like, congas. Being a visual thinker, like, I instantly saw these people with, like, forms in their hand. This is great writing.
To a certain degree, it's just like, let's get with the torture for a million years already.
Well, what makes me laugh is because I've done school abroad, so I have often referred to the paperwork involved to doing visas and
yes,
and all that lovely hullabaloo as red tape hell.
Absolutely.
So it's not much of a stretch in my imagination.
No,
for the first circle of hell to actually be
made up
red
of forms.
Tape hell.
Yeah, red tape hell. Absolutely. So yeah, no, this is where I first fell in love with the book and thought, yeah, okay, you've hooked me.
And no mistakes and no erasers are allowed. Of course. Must be in blue pen.
Right.
No. I was sorry. Soft pencil.
Yes. Quadruple A.
I'm sure they have since changed it since Cabal has been in hell though.
And then we meet Arthur Trubshaw.
Bullies his way into hell. And
I like the introduction of Arthur Trubshaw a little later. His life of licentious proceduralism. Like, who describes licentious proceduralism?
Ooh.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
I just like saying that.
Arthur Trubshaw, a Weasley man whom wears a teller's shade, died in a bank robbery, being shot to death asking for a bank receipt from the bandits. When first sent to hell, he rationalized the demons' tormenting schedules for maximum torment efficiency, organized a time and motion study for the imps, and tidied the underwear drawer of the demon princes and princesses. He's now in charge of the administration for hell, also a synonym for stupidity.
Oh my God, and that descriptor of, like, organizing the underwear drawer, and Lilith in particular was mortified.
Yep.
Like, that just... I laughed out loud at that. You know, once again, we show that we've got some, historical, theological background info being researched here, and get a good chuckle at that.
Well, and here's also where we get our first really good introduction to Johannes himself. Because he walks through the desert and is fully clothed and is just this force to be, like, all the people just part for him, like he's some sort of important figure, which he sort of just takes on as that persona because, well, of course he is. to go up to Trubshaw.
Also, this is where we see that in his late 20s, the chronological context for Johannes, so.
Right.
Yes.
So he does go straight up to Trubshaw and smacks his hand on the window on the closed sign, I think, until he shows up. Oh, hey, that's funny. I've got a note here. Teutonic, look up.
Oh, yeah, I did look that up. Yeah, actually, I took a photo of it, too.
And Sartre said that hell was other people. Who is Sartre?
So Teutonic means, well, Sartre was a French writer, I believe.
Yeah, philosopher.
Philosopher. And Teutonic is Germanic. I did look that up.
Yeah.
It's an ancient Germanic sect group of people.
So basically, he's German.
He's German.
He's German.
But old German.
So old German,
yeah. Old German, yeah. But yes.
Which makes a difference, especially if you're Hutterite or Mennonite. Sorry, Mennonite. Because they speak High German or Low German. Just for your information.
A little local knowledge. Yeah. Oh, yeah, oh, there you go.
Which their High German is very close to antiquated. Well, we can old German.
Right. Hang on, where did I find it? I'll find the thing. I promise.
So okay. Trubshaw basically says that, like, if you want to get into hell, you have to do the paperwork. And Cabal's like, well, I'm not dead, so I'm not doing the paperwork. And Trubshaw's like, well, if you're here, you're dead. And then Cabal says, well, I've already died. And, you know, didn't suit me.
I'm not dead. Tried it once. Didn't like it.
Didn't like it. And, like, we don't know what that's about yet. Because he didn't die in either of the short stories.
Right.
He didn't mention dying in either of the short stories.
I think this opens up the opportunity for another short story book. Mm-hmm. from what I understand from Johannes, or not you.
Jonathan L. Howard?
Jonathan L. Howard is that he has a book of all sorts of short stories from...
That are unpublished?
Yeah.
How dare he?
So maybe that story has already been told.
Sir.
Give us more.
Give us the more.
How dare you hold a secret Disney vault library in your collection? Release it to the public.
He's like the prince of short stories. Come on, give us more.
So Teutonic means relating to the Teutons, denoting the Germanic branch of the Indo-European language family. So Germanic peoples, Teutonic, Subian, or Gothic in older literature. Ethno-linguistic Indo-European group of Northern European origins. So yeah, identified by the use of Germanic languages, which diversified out of the Proto-Germanic during their pre-Roman Iron Age, which only history geeks like myself would find interesting. You're welcome.
There are others out there that will appreciate that knowledge.
Right?
But they're not listening to this podcast.
Or are they?
They are judging you. The German judge gives it a 5.
So there is a good way to jump past all the paperwork in hell, apparently.
Yeah, just be Cabal. Just
show Trubshaw his own dead skull. Yeah.
If you walk up to the clerk with their own skull, chances are they will speed up the process for you.
Well, necromancers are the boogeyman's boogeyman.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is totally fair. If you're threatening to raise someone from the dead and make them your...
Bitch,
yeah. Threshold. Yeah, that's not a great job description. It's a good threat.
I really love the passage. He smiled. And something like benevolence slipped into his expression for the first time. It was almost certainly a trick of the light.
Nice catch.
I love, he's got a couple of moments that are like this, where it's like this, he cracks a little smile. But of course, this is just not things you're, these are things you're seeing in your head. It's not actually happening. So Johannes does threaten Arthur with being raised and tortured. I love that whole concept that he's just...
It works, though.
And he has... And prior descriptions of him, this sort of really mention his soulless gaze and that people are really unnerved by him, even in hell.
Which is fair, because in the last short story that we did, the cop seemed a lot more buddy-buddy. He was like, yeah, whatever. I've seen this every day. You're nothing special. Cabal, like, I'll come have a drink with you. No issue. Like, even the cop's wariness seems less than people who are... already dead and shouldn't have to worry.
Well, already dead, they have more to worry about, apparently, because...
Are they going to die twice?
They can be raised up and made Cabal's bitch.
Yeah. Well, at least they hadn't thought about that until he said that. But it's, yeah.
it's either way, it gets points. Him in the door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I like that it's giving us sort of a base foundation of where his character is going to develop. So he starts off as this very calloused, cold, and soulless individual that just doesn't give two flying craps about what it's going to take to get what he wants.
Well, I love the fact that he's got the cojones to just walk into the gates of hell and bust down the door, essentially. Like, you gotta, love that.
I think it's a little bit of an act, this whole, like, I'm not smiling. It was a trick of the light. I'm a soulless individual. Everyone's afraid of me. But, like, when he does his back and forth banter with people, I mean, when he gets his sarcasm going, like, he seems to be capable of a joke and having fun, you know? But he shuts his own self down. He's like, no, I never do anything fun.
Well, and
but
I think,
then, you know?
I think the whole book, like, once we get mm-hmm. really into it, it's like there's this character development within the actions that he takes.
Listen up, learn how to dance. Slow, man.
Totally.
Well, he definitely has the art of sarcasm down.
Yes.
100%.
As my mother used to say, sarcasm is humor for people who are angry and hurt.
Wow. That's an interesting perspective.
Isn't it? So when you look at sarcasm, you put that into perspective of Johannes Cabal. Dark, eh?
Well, I'm putting it into the perspective of most of the people I know.
I know, we're all so fantastic.
Staring at you, Jess? No, just kidding.
I am angry all the time.
I am angry and dark. Oh my God. I've accepted that.
I just always compared myself to the Hulk, but...
Awesome.
So we are introduced, we have another break, another action blip.
Mm-hmm. Bloop,
so we don't know exactly how, but next person that he obviously makes it in, because the archdemon Retuth Slabuth, a stack of shifting non-usled shit.
Okay, so we don't jump. We don't jump because it says the archdemon had been informed that hell had been invaded. And being a general of the Infernal Hordes, did he intend to do anything about it? So the news of Cabal travels fast to Archdemon Retuth Slabuth. So being the general of the Hell's Army, he needs to do something about this.
Is it Euclidean? Okay.
I'm not sure what...
A stack of shifting non-Euclidean angles topped by a horse's skull and a stylized ancient Grecian helmet. Dark general of infernal hordes, father of desolation, despoiler of innocence. Originally started his career as ragtag sly boots, despoiler of milk and entangler of shoelaces.
And I love here when we're actually introduced to yet another demon, it goes back to that more, like, this is more of that anatomical game of consequences, right? It's like there's a mix match of, you know, the different sort of angles and horse skull and Grecian historical helmets and, like, that mismatch of game of consequences equals a demon. So I enjoy how that's mm-hmm. a recurring thing, right?
Well, it's sort of reticence of, Cthulhu. Help me out here.
Cthulhu? Oh, H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah. It's a very Lovecraftian sort of way to describe monsters.
Mm. Well, and there was that influence for JLH.
Very, very abstract.
Right.
So Johannes comes across Retuth Slabuth, but it so happens he does know that origin story, and this gains audience with Satan as a result of these embarrassing details.
Okay, we all start somewhere.
One of my favorite is, this is hell. You can't just turn up and say, oh, I was just in the neighborhood and thought I'd call by and have a bit of a chin wag with Lord Satan. It simply isn't done. Like, there's just this, like, impertinence. Like, what are you doing? You just come here and, like, pop in for a tea? Like, this is Satan.
There's a certain amount of English highbrow to this, too.
100%. So.
English etiquette.
Like, I just absolutely love that part where it's like, you can't just come in here and have a chin wag with Lord Satan.
Well, even Cabal's reply, too. He's like, hasn't been done.
Ah, gets him in his own logic. Absolutely. It was the amazing insult. That was it. In terms of when he's talking to Ratu Slaboth and he says, I call you duplicitous, mendacious, and thoroughly amateur at both enterprises. Again, like, Johannes always has the most amazing insults. And you see it all throughout where it's like this like very highbrow insult where like you almost need a dictionary to tell if you've been slapped upside the head. You know what I'm saying? Like,
not going to lie, I have used a dictionary many times to figure out what the hell he said in some cases.
Totally, and it keeps coming back where it's just the, like, he has the most creative and linguistically inventive, like, or most literarily inventive.
I'd like to know how naturally that comes to JLH.
Me too. Absolutely. Yep. Hey, JLH, if you're listening, does this come naturally to you?
You can know by leaving a very rude comment. On
podcast. Stop reviewing my books.
Yeah. They're not for you.
Move on to a different author.
He would say it much more beautifully, though.
Yeah, my British accent sucks, I know.
Well, I meant his specific wording. The same time.
As long as I got a draft in hand, we can talk.
Well, according to that video, he's very forgiving about what people think about his books. He's like, ah, it's your own imagination.
Absolutely. It's part of the charm.
Yeah.
So yes, Ragtag Slyboots, despoiler of milk and entangler of shoelaces, is put in his place, and Cabal is granted access to the inner sanctum of Lord Satan.
Yes.
For a chinwag, because he's popped in and in the neighborhood.
Hi.
Well, he had a very, very small description of Satan, that he is all things to all people. He looked exactly as you would imagine.
Exactly. Well, and I think that's that polytheism that we were talking about as well. Like, there's no, you know, like, if you envision Satan as some sort of dark energy, then that's what you'll see. If you envision him as some dude with some horns and fire, you know, like, essentially that's your perception filtering that.
Or a little old man in some cases.
Right?
Yeah.
It's almost like in Harry Potter, the Oogity Boogity, like, it manifests itself as your worst nightmare, you know? So no matter what, it's always going to be the worst thing.
Now I'm trying to remember the name of that. We'll have all these Harry Potter fans going,
I know, this! The absolute fact that I can't think of the name. It's so horrible. How many times have I read those books and watched those movies?
But yes, that smell. It is all the things to all people that might be frightening.
Yeah.
That is Satan. So we discover that his lack of a soul, as originally signed off to Satan, is now proving to be a little problematic for Johannes Cabal's experiments, which is ironic.
A Bogart.
Bogart!
Yes!
Okay. Nice. Essentially, the irony is that he sold his soul to grant access to a career that having a soul actually is kind of important to do.
Yeah, essentially he like says that he's created a empty chamber within himself that his experiments are trying to latch onto, which I could see being a problem.
Right?
Yeah.
The what is it? Not archetypes. I'm trying to remember the word that was used. Yeah, anyway.
Well, there's a nice little ha-ha moment that I really had a good chuckle at. It was just small. I don't know if anyone actually noticed it, but Cabal gave, Ratu Slaboth.
I don't know, maybe.
Okay. He starts chuckling, and Cabal gives him a milk-curdling look and continues to the former despoiler of milk.
Yeah. Oh, nice catch. I didn't even hear that one. Like that.
He's like, oh.
Show him at his own game.
Damn. Cabal.
Well, that's another thing is that, like, it's very, like, a third person omniscient because you're getting everyone's viewpoints that are in the room each and every time, you know? Mm. Like, every time, like, when we met that first demon, Lucifuge. You know, you're getting his thoughts and actions at the same time as Cabal's when you meet
Ratu Slabuth?
Yeah, all of them. I don't know why I can't remember a single one of their names. It's too much random weird.
I don't know why I can.
There's a lot of extra letters in there. I can't recall them. But the point is that we kept getting all of their own, like, and, like, their thoughts and their actions and their moments right before Cabal enters the room. So it's a nice viewpoint to have kind of the entire room responding and acting and judging all at once in the same presentation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Satan decides to pull up the contract to look at it and figures out, like, he's like, oh, yes, okay, I remember you.
Right.
And in the contract, Johannes had given up his soul immediately than waiting for the request of his soul. The Faust clause.
Immediate gratification for an immediate soul. Right. And I guess,
and unlimited, you know, power for soul, right? Like,
totally. And Faust is a pretty popular character, but just in case you don't know, it's like, you know, dude gives up his soul to Satan for all the money, all wealth, the knowledge, riches, knowledge, yeah, fame. There's occasional translations, but for the most part, it's essentially to become, you know, higher than God, but a man, like, right, you know.
And this section is also where you see the what you were saying earlier, Tanzin, about the reference to Tartarus. And it says, Satan says to him, "Now, as I've already said, I can't start giving souls back willy-nilly, or else I'll never hear the end of it. There'd be a queue from here to Tartarus of ne'er-do-wells, whinging and whining and wringing their hands, and I get enough of that at the best of times." So you must appreciate that it can't be anything easy. Pour décourager, oh my gosh, I'm the one who speaks French. Pour décourager les autres. To discourage others.
Oh.
Essentially is what that means. But yes, so we have a contract being presented so that he can take a look at the fine print.
Yes.
Satan saying, I can't just give it back to you.
Well, yeah, and Cabal's, like, essentially trying to argue that he's a special case. He's like, you don't understand how badly I need that soul. It's almost like, you know, the typical, like, you know, genie in a bottle, make a wish, and you don't really realize what you're getting. It's like, I didn't realize that I was giving up the ingredient that I needed to make the recipe that I was asking for. Like,
exactly. You know, like, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, like, you ask, you know, for, you know, the greatest fudge recipe in the world, not realizing that you're promising to never use chocolate again.
Right.
Right? So it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I know I gave you my soul in exchange for necromancy, but, like, you should have told me that I needed a soul to do necromancy.
Well, I mean, just have a compelling argument, because the avatars, namely the...
That was the word I was
thinking. The little man with a big beard.
Satan's avatar.
Yeah. Keeps fouling up because he's attracted to this lack of soul.
Yes.
So that's the unintended consequences, which, mm-hmm, I think Satan kind of goes, yeah.
Tough luck.
Okay, well, we can do something about this. Let's make this more interesting.
Mm-hmm. So there's a new contract, which is nice, but...
Proposes a wager.
Cabal doesn't like it so much. Well, yes, a wager, but...
Well, yeah, he proposes a wager, but he doesn't know what to propose, mm-hmm, which Satan takes it upon himself to look through a big giant file.
The jumble box.
Yeah. I love the jumble box.
I want to play in the jumble box and see what's in there. But it's interesting.
Probably that, not, like, a lot of good. Even for how long demons are around? I don't know if you'd like what you'd find.
But the wager itself is interesting. I didn't think that was an important part until you get a little bit lower. I'm not going to do spoilers, but, like, the whole Johannes proposing a wager to begin with, we find out is actually kind of not really his style, right? So essentially, mm-hmm, the entire interaction with Satan, you see, looking back after you've read a little more of the book, you see this sort of subtle manipulation in a way where both are sort of trying to dance around each other, mm-hmm, and negotiate the best. And, like, essentially Cabal is using the idea of the wager to attract Satan. Not that it would be his normal way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Because am I allowed to do spoiler alert?
Sure.
I don't think it's the biggest spoiler, so say it.
No. Okay. But yeah, later on when we get introduced to Horst, he makes a comment like, you, Johannes, you made a wager. Like, that's so unlike mm-hmm. you, essentially, is kind of what he says. So it's like, it's interesting that you see Johannes, his calculated moves, like the way he's trying to get Satan rather than just, okay, it can't be done, piss off, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you agreed to the first contract, so go away. But it actually shows that Johannes's mind, like some sort of machine, is trying to figure out the best way to manipulate Satan yeah.
and that to his totally own shows, end. You know, Cabal's whole thing too is that Cabal is a scientist. You know, he wouldn't make wagers because you can't hypothesize and theorize, and you know,
well, exactly. There's no guaranteed outcome on that.
Exactly right. There's no controllable aspect.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, in this slight of make Satan come up with the wager, make it be Satan's idea to have a wager, and all these other things, is like his smallest control over the situation is that it's like, even if I let him come up with all the theories, it was really me who right. started this off the bat. You know, I'm still going to get what I want out of it, right?
Well, if you're going to try and manipulate Satan, you got to be smart about
right?
it.
Right. Mm-hmm. The only problem is that, you know, the particular wager that Satan comes up with, just as manipulative, has been doing this for much longer. It's like, listen.
Fact.
Yeah. So essentially boiling down to saying, well, okay, you want to do something for me, get me 100 souls in exchange for your one.
Right.
And do it via carnival?
Yeah. So he goes through this jumble box of mm-hmm. options after some spring cleaning. I was like, what? Spring cleaning? Like, is this...
Is there a spring in hell?
Well, like... I've had a few hellish springs.
Although, to be fair, I guess any time Persephone is gone would be spring.
Oh.
And if there's a Tartarus, there has to be a Persephone,
right? You're getting deep again. Love it.
I love the fact that Satan says that for the 100 souls, the signatures don't even have to be in blood. Although, it would be nice if somebody made the effort now and then.
A little bit of tradition is nice. Yeah. Come on. Totally. Yeah.
To be fair, though, I mean, he didn't bring
the dread rod.
He didn't bring his dread rod, so he's really, really not living up to his full potential. I think the demons can insult his showmanship a little, stage presence.
Yeah. I gotta say, the banter between Satan and Cabal is quite fun. Like,
yes.
Satan has a good sense of humor until he doesn't. He even apologizes for making fun of Cabal's lack of social skills. He makes fun of him first, and then he's like, I'm sorry. And he does use a bit of cliches, like, you can't have your cake and eat it too. No rest for the wicked.
Absolutely.
But going back to that rubbish box, he finds a bunch of different carnivals and sees what is actually available. So I took it upon myself to actually do a little bit more research.
Go.
Yes. Cougars and Darks Carnival is a reference to Something Wicked This Way Comes from the novel. I think it's Cougar is spelt a little bit differently. But it's again the same sort of concept, like stealing souls. Yeah. Let's see. Brown's Carnival is actually Dr. Brown's of world renown. Dr. Diablo's Torture Garden. This is a film from 1968.
Hmm.
And then the final one being the final option, which Cabal ends up with, is the Carnival of Discord project, which is solely to this book. It's there's no reference outside of
right. I like Dr. Diablo's Torture Garden. Terrific success. We're franchising that.
Franchise is the most evil of things.
Yeah.
Hence why there's a movie about it, right?
Hilarious.
Yeah. So there's a moment in there when Cabal is like, his exact words is that he's hardly gregarious, right? So he's like, I'm not a sociable person. I'm not a fun person. I've got no grasp on this carnival business and how it operates, et cetera, et cetera. Not notably lighthearted, but I disagree with him on a lot of that, because this whole trek down to hell has been one huge show and one huge parlor trick more or less. I mean, for me, this seems like he's got a ton of showmanship and is ready to go, you know? Like,
right.
It's been all theatric so far.
Well, he doesn't give himself credit for that, though. Mm-hmm. Like, even when we look at the short stories, he did in the Exuent Demon King, mm-hmm. he really did a wonderful job of reenacting a Demon King
yeah.
that scared the little tyke shitless, but he did not consider himself an actor.
Yeah.
That's a good point. But also, in terms of the Exuent Demon King, is it that he's a showman or is it that he'll do it as a means to an end? Mm. Right? Like, what is the point? What is the purpose of putting on the show? It's not necessarily to draw attention to himself or to entertain the masses. It's this is the costume, essentially, I have to put on in order to get where I need to be or understand what I need to do or do what I need to do, right?
Right.
So it's less about showmanship for me. It's more just like, I will become the chameleon I need to get what I need to done.
Well, in that case, you should have no problem with a carnival.
Yeah. True.
Put on the circus pants and get on the stage.
He just hasn't wrapped his mind around it yet. Yeah. What the means to the end, how he's going to utilize that yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It right. is out of his wheelhouse.
Yeah. To be fair, this is, you know, probably not what he was expecting. And even the 100 souls thing, which is, I think, a fairly common Satan deal, you know? Like, all right, you want your soul back. I want more souls in exchange. That wouldn't be a surprise to me. Even Kabbalah's
You've
like
made this deal before?
Yeah. what me and my friends do is our business. But the point is that he shouldn't be as shocked as he is to be asked to just collect more souls on behalf of Satan. So I could be wrong about Faust, but I feel like that's what happens with Faust, too, is that he has to go and collect other people's souls right. in order to save his own, right? So yeah. A man as well-read as Cabal should have been expecting this sort of thing already, right? Even if the carnival is a surprise, you think that he would have been coming down here, and it could be part of his ploy to be totally shocked about it all. But to me, you know, Cabal was like, you want 100 souls in exchange of mine in 1 year? It's like, buddy, yes. Right. The most classic deal with the devil ever. Yes.
True that.
Yeah, Cabal does challenge Satan for not being fair, which was a bad idea, because that's where Satan loses his temper.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like, no. And I have to quote this. This made me laugh. I was cast down from the presence of God himself into this dark, sulfurous pit and condemned to spend eternity here. Have you tried saying sorry? Interrupted Cabal.
I love that.
You just simply tried apologizing. Like, that could solve a lot of your problems, no? No, I haven't. I was sent down for a sin of pride. It rather undermines my position if I say sorry. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, those two banter. Like, it's banter phenomenal. Between them is great. It's really just wonderful.
But it's like, can you imagine, like, what would you say if you had a conversation with Satan, really, over your soul?
Right? The nerve. I don't think... I'd have a little bit more respect, I think. I'd be terrified shitless to actually be talking to Satan.
And that's not irreverence but he's like, I'm talking about.
He's just like, have you tried this?
Yeah. And to be fair, like, he said earlier on in the two short stories, both times it came up, he's like, well, we all do die eventually. He's like, if this is now, fine, but I'm going to try not to, right? So, fair enough. If you're going down to hell, you have to at least have some consideration. Like, this might be it.
Be the final straw.
And also, accepted. On the other hand, though, as, you know, in an almost throwaway comment, he has died and come back again, so maybe he is a little bit cocky anyways.
Right. Mm-hmm. Can't keep a good scientist down.
What you got to lose? Been dead already. Yep.
You've met Satan and lived once. Who cares now?
Yeah. Nothing shocks me.
Right.
So he does agree to the terms, and 100 souls, or he loses his life and ends up in a fatuitous hell.
So the Carnival of Discord never became operational. But it is suddenly within Cabal's responsibility to run and get those 100 souls within a year by next Wellspricknacht.
Yeah. And Cabal is really just too smart for his own good. Like, he is just a whippersnap. He is really too smart for his own good, but he doesn't really understand social interactions. Because he had no concept of why people might want to waste their time and money at a carnival where they could be simply doing something important. But he was sure as soon as he applied himself, he might be able to think down to that level.
Yeah, think down to that level. Oh, dear.
So is that self-confidence? Is that overconfidence? Is that hubris?
All of the above.
Right? Yeah. Is that...
To be fair, though, all of that applies anyways with someone who's making a deal with the devil.
Mm.
Right? Like, it's hubris each and every time when you get to that point.
Right. You have to be at least a little bit of a sociopath to be able to make a deal with the devil, if not more.
Mm.
Yeah, and especially because, like, up until now, we don't know that he's made a deal with the devil. Apparently, in his early 20s, potentially at 18, when he got on this trek to become a necromancer. So,
what is the legal age of necromancy exactly?
Well, but my point is that in most stories of necromancy is you learn it yourself, right? You don't make a deal with the devil and get it. So to know that he just
took the fast 18 track?
Was like, yeah, took the fast route and was like, listen, I want to do this. College, medical school, that's not working out. What else can I do in an afternoon? Like, I need a plan and I need it now. Like,
he's very insistent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why go to a carnival when you could do something important, like go to hell and make a deal with the devil or two?
Right. Well, then he has such that laser-like vision focus on what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't occur to him that other people don't have that sort of drive that he does because he no longer sees what it's like to be a regular person.
Yeah, wow. And even like less of drive, but just, you know, multitudes of goals at once, right? Because, you know, for a lot of us, it could be, you know, we have a goal that we want to get to a certain career or a certain point in our life, but we also want to go to the carnival. And for Cabal, he just doesn't have that level of what's more and more important. He has one thing and it's one thing only. And then he has another thing and it's that thing only.
Is it? I'm trying to remember. I'm pretty sure that at some point we discover what it is that kind of inspired.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to do a spoiler on this one, but we figure out why it is that Cabal is sort of inspired to follow necromancy to begin with. So mm-hmm. it's not, there may be reasons as to mm-hmm, why he mm-hmm. initially sold his soul that are not necessarily selfish. I just want to fast track my career and make it to the top of my profession. Like, I don't know if there is that level of...
Either way, we're a decade in at this point since his last contract with Satan, more or less.
Well, within the last decade. We don't know exactly how long that contract was.
Yeah, we don't know when he made the contract to become a necromancer, but we know from the short stories that he essentially started his path to necromancy at 18.
Yeah.
So at least when he got the idea for it was 18, if not when he met Satan.
Yeah.
But still, we're close to a decade at least.
Mm.
So 18 is the legal age for necromancy.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know for any aspiring...
Practice responsible.
practice responsible corpse raising.
Yes.
Always make sure
start
to research.
Start with grave robbing and build yourself up from there.
Anatomy 101 followed by...
Yeah, take your prerequisites.
Absolutely.
So Satan gives him a drop of blood, a single drop of black blood, his diabolical influence and power, and an hourglass to measure the year. And with a snap of Satan fingers, Cabal is elsewhere.
Significantly easier to get out of hell than I would expect.
Well, you know, the Prince of Darkness has the power to just, you know, transport you wherever the hell he wants to.
I don't want you here anymore. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Snap.
This concludes our episode 3.1, The Faust Clause. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and necromancers.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the undead alive and see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling, and remember, reanimation is trending.